Angel mystic Atira was born with an amazing gift. Atira has seen and talked with angels and her spirit guide for as long as she can remember. And now she connects you with spirit as the angels answer your questions on past lives, passed over loved ones, dreams, relatives, workplace, and spiritual experiences. Atira is an Edgar Cayce Foundation handpicked psychic and is featured in The Days of Wonder by G.W. Hardin. Atira's magical, uplifting, worldwide readings are just $100 for 45 minutes, which includes an audio tape. Email angelreadings@angelscribe.com. That's angelreadings@angelscribe.com for an appointment, or go to Atira's website at angelscribe.com. For metaphysical, straight talk from the heart, it's Atira, Angel Mystic. Here's Mary Ellen Angel Scribe, author of Expect Miracles, with a Miracle Minute.
Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And today I want to talk about being a child and being clairvoyant. I've had so very many emails about that subject. And I actually was giving a couple workshops, and people wanted to know about what it was like to be me when I was a child. So I'm going to talk some from my perspective, and then I'm going to give you hopefully some tools. So if you're lucky enough to have one of those incredible indigo, rainbow, or crystal children out there, or if you just have children who are very, very sensitive, you'll know sort of some techniques and some things that you can bring to helping them cope with that ability and that knowingness. I really think all of us, whether you are this kind of new brand of kids we've got coming in now, but I think that all kids come in as sensor feelers, because we sense and feel and know and react to that intuitive sixth sense long before we really understand the rest of our five senses as children. So we sense and know that who's mom and who's safe when we're babies far before we really get to acknowledge or understand that person in our lives. And so our sixth sense is really turned on long before the other ones come into play. And as a sensor feeler, I think everyone senses and feelings long before they see and hear. And because we come in as sensor feelers, often we are more emotional than most children. I think all children, up until they're about 5 years old, their senses are turned up high, the volume's up high. Around 5 and 6, it starts getting turned down a little, and they start getting the language, and they start getting to discern a little more, and understand and assimilate knowledge. But up until that, they're really reacting at gut levels and emotional levels. And if I had a penny for every time my mother used to say I wore my heart on my sleeves, I'd probably be independently wealthy. Because intuits and sensitives do. They sense and feel, and that's why we're called sensitives. We're sensitive to the vibrational fields of everything around us. And so that means we are sensitive to the energy fields of other people, but we are often also sensitive to the vibrations that are emitted around us, meaning substation, electrical substations, telephones, cell phones, computers, TVs, all of those things. Some of the reason I think these kids are being diagnosed with HDD and all of these things is because we have become hypersensitive, even more hypersensitive, because they're plugged in from a very young age. You know, I see 3- and 5-year-olds playing the little Game Boys and just, you know, glued to the computer and everything else. So our sensory, our sixth sense, our sensory is getting on overload. And so pulling these kids back a little bit from all of that overload of sensory things, even though you want them to be able to run the computer now and be able to be very much more ambidextrous and probably more, they have better motor functions, you also don't want them on sensory overload, and it happens very easily and very fast. So pulling them back, helping them to read, helping them to sense and know colors. To sense, is it about them or someone else, is a very key thing. When I was talking to some parents that have very sensitive kids, and they said that they just, you know, get overwhelmed in school. They get overwhelmed if there's a lot of people around. And that's because they don't know to discern, is this about them or somebody else? And asking them that simple question, I don't care if it's a very small child who can't verbalize very much, they will let you know if it's them. If it's something that's going on in their energy field and going on with their emotions, you will get to discern. And if it's not, they'll tend to point out what it is. And so by asking that simple question, you can sort of help them to discern and to use some techniques to keep their space a little more protected and a little more, the volume down a little lower. And it's simply by letting them use a visualization, using tapes when you put them to bed, that the night is all right, that the night is safe. Edgar Cayce, the ARE Foundation, did a wonderful series, and I don't know if they still have them out, for the night is all right, for children who had trouble with sleeping and being in the dark. And one of the reasons kids get very hypersensitive when the lights go out is their sensing feeling gets stronger because you've taken away one of the other senses. So when the light goes out, their sensing feeling, knowing, gets hyper extended. And so things rush in from the day into their auric field, and so they start getting overwhelmed. A lot of people, if you'll notice, a lot of people that you talk to, when it gets around 4 or 5 o'clock, and they have this kind of energy collapsing in on them, and it's partly it is from being in the workaday world, and then all of a sudden you're off, and so some of the stress leaves. But it kind of folds in on your energy field sometimes. And so then about 9 o'clock, 9:30 at night, again, you get that kind of collapsy feeling where everything kind of feels dominoing towards your body, into your energy field. And one of the ways to help prevent that is, first of all, to clean your energy fields, to defrag your energy fields by using white light, by using prayer, and by being conscious of your sense of space. Adults have it much easier to do that, to make their sense of space. One of the techniques I use with kids, especially, that's really simple, and parents, it'll help you so much for kids to define their sense of space, is to take the kids and let them blow bubbles. And as they blow a bubble and get the sense of bubbles, what bubbles are like and how they work, then you can talk about putting a bubble around them, because they will acquaint bubbles with something joyful and fun, and bubbles make you laugh. You can't be in a bad mood and blow bubbles. It doesn't work that way. So once they get a sense of this, the bubbles and the iridescence of bubbles, you can actually start using that as a visualization that they can use around their body. They have this beautiful bubble around their body that shimmers and that protects them, and talk about their guardian angels that work with them. Kids who are very, very sensitive, I encourage the parents to take them out and let them pick out their guardian angel, like a little figurine that represents their guardian angel, because it's very important for these kids to feel safe. I find out that often kids are very frightened about the dark. Because, like I said, one sense goes down, which is your visual. Your other senses heightens. So you sense more, feel more. And also because in the dark, our sense of space is changed. So we don't have the same sense of space when we're in a very visual lit place as when we're in the dark. And so as you close down your visual, your sense of space, your actually auric field shrinks in a little bit, because it's instantaneously that you suck that auric field in close to your body. So what you really want to teach them to do is, rather than sucking in their auric field at night, is to push your auric field out a little bit, because it gives them a bigger sense of safeness and space. So teach them to start expanding their energy out, blowing it up like a balloon, out to surround their body and out to surround their bed, and pretty soon to fill the room, and then have their guardian angel incorporated into this, like to hold the space. And it's a very simple, you know, little technique. Even if you buy balloons at first to teach them and blow them up together and things, they'll start having a better sense of space and not being afraid. The other thing my mother always did, bless her heart, was open the closet doors and have us look in there, and so that we would be satisfied nothing was in there, and to look under the bed and, of course, chase some dust bunnies under there. I think it was, A, her way of dealing with our fears, but I also think that the angels were working with her to help me not be afraid of those spaces. Because one of the things that, and it made so much sense, I really read this later in later years in a Ted Andrews book that he wrote for children, and that is that the space, the closet is not really in a room, it's a space of its own, so it is like a dimensional doorway that actually becomes sort of a sacred space in its own way, so spirits can come in and out of that, as well as the space under the bed, because it is defined, again, it's not in the room, it's really above the room and below the bed. So I think all these nighttime terror stories where something's under the bed and something's in the closet, there's something based in fact because it creates another dimensional doorway or a space of energy that can be open to spirit. And it, most of the time it's really great spirits, it's not scary spirits. But we as children and we often as adults don't know to discern. And the thing is, the law of attraction, whether we like it or not, works. Whether we're conscious of it or not. So that whole, if you are afraid there's something under the bed or there is something in the closet, your fear will attract something fearful. And not necessarily a bad thing, but a negative emotion or a negative spirit that has also a fear. So then that cords to fear. So the more that you can help your children deal with being not being afraid and talk about, you know, what fear is and talk to them in ways to not let them be afraid by using breathing techniques to know that they can call out to you. Using colored lights, the little colored Christmas lights, you can use those as night lights. Those are very good to use, too. In particularly green or blue. The reason green is so powerful is green is always a healing color, and it tends to help people calm down. So using it with a green light is wonderful. It really helps you calm down. And blue is also calming. Blue is, especially for water signs, they're very attracted to blue, and it helps to calm them. So both those colors would be very helpful in night lights. Having their guardian angel right by their nightstand, I think, is also a very good thing. So the other question I'm often asked is, how early do children see spirit? I think we see it from birth. I don't think we can verbalize it, but I do think we see it from birth, because I have memories of being in a crib with bubbles of light that when I was small, that's all I could acquaint him to, because my understanding really from a very small age was they would be bubbles of light. And the bubbles of light come in different sizes. I would see them as little sparks of light, and sometimes people catch those little sparks of light in the corners of their eyes, and they look like little sparklers shimmering off in the corners of your eyes, and that's spirit, often a form of spirit communication, trying to get attention to you. Your angels or guides or masters, loved ones, sometimes will even use that kind of technique to try and get your attention. And the reason you see them in your peripheral vision is because to see spirit, 90% of the time you have to defocus a little. Because the dimension that they exist in is a different dimension than ours. We are really three-dimensional, and most of the spirit things are in fourth, fifth, and seventh, and on up dimensions. So when you are looking to see an aura, you look beyond the person, almost into the wall. It causes your eyes to defocus, and then you will begin to see the colors around a person. It's the same way with spirit. Remember when you're a kid and you're in class and all of a sudden you're staring out the window and pretty soon you're really gone and you have no clue what the teacher asks you, because they're going to darn well right then they're going to call your name. And you come back and you snap back in, and at some vague level you might be able to pull it out of your hat that you caught the last three words and can answer them. But most of the time you have defocused, and at some point you've actually done a little astral projection. Or defocused enough that then you would see spirit in some ways. Once in a while, you are totally in a daydream or in other things, but more often than not, you really are in some of the in-between dimensions. And we work at many, many dimensions, just like the human mind takes in so many billion parts of information per second, it's almost overwhelming. But back to this point that I was starting on, too, is that I can remember from a very, very young age before I could really verbalize seeing these little orbs. I later learned we call them orbs, I guess, now that I'm a mature person. Orbs of light. To me, they were like bubbles of light, and they would be different colors, and they would be iridescent-looking often, white with iridescent-looking things. And I would say some of them, and I think they're different kinds of spirits from my understanding and my work with spirits. Some of them would be the size of a dime and go up to the size of a baseball. And often that was just energy and energy that's formed that is used by many spirit forms. So when you hear, hello?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I want to tell you, you are right on.
Thank you.
Everything you said is right on.
Oh, thank you. So where are you calling from and what's your name?
I'm calling from Chicago. My name is Stephen Maber. I'll be hosting a program shortly. And I've been writing a book for quite a while about enlightened kids.
Well, make sure you get Don's. Get to Don and give me your information because I'd love to have you on the air and we'll interview you.
That would be awesome.
Awesome.
Sure.
So tell me, do you have a good child story to share with me?
I sure do. I have a great one. I have a number of them, but I won't take up your whole show with it. My daughter is now 14. I always asked her when she was young what her intuition said. You have to give the power to the kids and let them tell you the simple truth, because as adults, we tend to complicate things.
Oh, we judge too much. Just ask them simple questions, and they'll tell you how it is.
Well, you'll love this story. You ready?
Ready.
Okay. 6 months in the womb, I play music, and I sang to my daughter inside the womb. And one time, she kicked, and I was sort of surprised, and I jumped back and I said, whoa. And me and my ex-wife never talked about this, ever. At 4.5 years old, she turned to me and she said, Dad, you remember when I was in Mommy's tummy and I kicked and you jumped back and said, whoa?
I believe that. I think we're as souls, we're conscious from the very beginning.
Exactly.
Great story.
It is a great story.
Yeah, please make sure Don gets your information or contact us through the website, and we'll do an interview about your stories and things from the book. It'd be great.
Yeah, I have many more, but I'll tell you one more simple one, and then let you go on with your show, which is I do allergy elimination and different kinds of healing, and I have for almost 30 years, and I do a lot of it through kinesiology. And this one boy, I just asked him a simple question, what do we need to do to stay in balance? And he said, don't fight, think loving thoughts.
It's true. It is as simple as that. If we'd only listen to the kids, this world would get straightened out faster. Thank you so much for calling in.
One more little comment. Is if you notice the babies today, they always are looking above our the top of our heads, because they can see they can see the angels and the energy above our top chakra.
Yeah, they're always drawn to our light. Yeah,
right.
True.
Anyway, I just wanted to tell you that I love what you're talking about. I think it's great.
Thanks so much.
And thank you so much.
Look forward to talking to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I do think almost all babies see our energy. I really think that that's why they can tell who they're comfortable with being held by and who they're not. And it keeps them, you know, you can really tell if your baby doesn't like to be held by somebody, there's something going on in that person's life. They're angry or they're having problems. You know, trust that. Trust that feedback when those little kids say, I don't want to play with that person. I don't want to be around that person. They're sensing, feeling, and knowing at a very deep level. So back to the orbs. So the small orbs, the ones that are about the size of a dime and they go up to about a baseball, this is just from my childhood. You know, other people may have other opinions, but I can really only talk from my own frame of reference on this. Often those are energy, the energy that builds and spirit sometimes draws on. We have, you know, energy that forms, and you'll hear people like from TAPS talk about energy orbs, and it just shows that there's energy built up, psychokinetic energy, and I think there is orbs that are just that. But then there are orbs that tend to be baseball size, a little bigger, and then they go big to as big as, you know, big, that are often how spirit comes in, how spirits start to manifest. They draw their energy in towards their spiritual solar plex and then start expanding or elongating. And if you watch some of those shows where they show the spirit comes in a center point of light, or you'll see a point of light, and then it builds and starts to expand and elongate, and out pops an angel. So often that's how I would see angels form. It's almost like they're a small point of light. It gets bigger, and then it almost multiplies, and then almost shrinks, and then goes elongated, and angels appear out of that energy or light. People who have passed over often come in through more elongated that I see most of the time. I think that they have to work a little more at how they move their energy in the electromagnetic field, and so you may even see them come in as a triangle or a more distorted sphere of light when they come out and manifest and then become, you know, draw on the electromagnetic field and the ectoplasm, which is the etheric energy around people. And so they will form in the room a little more sometimes as a pinpoint of energy, which then comes to be a little bigger than a baseball, and then kind of comes into a smokiness, or comes into almost like a cloud or smokiness that comes into a room. So I think that from my frame of reference, angels tend to come in a more orb-like, in elongated, popping in and coming out of that iridescent bubble, and then people have passed over, and other kinds of spirit forms come in that more smoky, cloud-like kind of energy. I also have seen a lot of fairies, and fairies are very much in that energy form of that more sparkly kind of thing, that almost little sparkler, spark of light, glistening. Most of the time, elementals, fairies, things like that, come in sizes about the size of a coffee cup. So when kids start talking about these kinds of energies or these things, or did you see the blue light, or did you see the green light, or do you see that or this, ask them what they're to describe it or to draw it. Often kids, when you look at kids' drawings, you are really blown away because they will draw what they see, and they draw spirit a lot. I can remember looking at these kids. A friend of mine was a kindergarten teacher. And I can remember looking at some of the drawings these kids were drawing, and I go, look at how many of them are drawing energy fields. And she just thought, oh, well, they're confused about how the sun is, you know. And they would be drawing these, like, radiating yellow lights out from behind these people. And she was just going, oh, I thought they were just like, you know, I'd tell them, oh, no, draw the sun up here. It's a circle, and it looks like this. And really what the kids were drawing were the energy fields that they were seeing and the lights that they were seeing around people. And so it was really interesting. We started kind of looking at the drawings of these kids, and there was one, so she asked him to draw the kids in the class, to draw each other. So it was a really kind of interesting thing. When we compared the drawings, there was this one kid that energy looked very different than the rest of the kids. It was browns and grays and things like that. And I said to my friend, I said, let's kind of see if you can find out kind of what's going on at home there. I said, something's going on. I said, because I would read that maybe this kid's, you know, parents are going through a divorce. He's depressed. I mean, these are energies that I would see around that kind of thing. There was another kid in the class that had dark greens, like almost a pea green, rusty brown greens. I said, I will bet you this child has a health issue. And so it was very interesting that these kids, each one drew pictures of everybody in the class and put initials under them of what their first name was. And it was true. The kid with the gray and the dark colors actually was, his parents were in a divorce. It was very a domestic violence thing. And so the kid was really emitting that depression and that fear and that worry in his energy field, and the kids were picking up on it. And then the other kid did have a health issue, which thank goodness they took care of. But so kids really are very brilliant, very seeing things at so many levels that we are so locked down about. And so by encouraging your kids, and when they draw, ask them, what does that color mean to you? When I was a kid, Dom used to play a game with me, and I think I've talked about it a couple times on the air. He used to say, what color is that person? And I at that time was, you know, 5 years old, and I knew maybe red, green, and blue, and, you know, nature colors, a few things. And so I started carrying my cigar box, which had all my crayons in, and I would say, oh, it's this color, or whatever the crayon I had in there that was closest to what I was seeing. And then he would say, what are you going to do about it? What can you do about it? And at first I just didn't get it. I was like, huh, you know, I can't fix this. An adult, you know, they're bigger than me. What does he want? But he really was trying to get me to get, is it an emotional thing? Because he would go, are they mad? Are they crying? What is it? And so I got that often there was something emotional going on. And then he would say, okay, how can we help? So sometimes it was asking their angel to help them. Sometimes it was praying for them. Sometimes, I have to tell you, I felt like I had to add a color to them. And the first time I went up to my mom's bowling friends and tried to color them with my crayons, it was not a successful moment in my life. Because, I mean, they all thought I'd, you know, flipped out. And I was just trying to add a little pink to the person's aura because the person was sad. Little did I know that this person, one of my mother's bowling friends, had actually lost her husband. And so the only thing I could think was to give her happiness, to give her love. And pink, of course, for me was the color for love. So, interestingly enough, that little innocent Dom game when I was a kid really was teaching me to read auras, asking me how I could help in that individual, and trying to figure out means of doing it without getting put away in a padded cell. Welcome to Airwaves.
Hi, Atira. It's Pat and Chehalis.
Hey, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
For an old-tired Batwoman, can't complain.
Good. What can I do for you today?
Well, I have a question for you, please. I am so interested in what you're saying because it's all true, as we both know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to know about you. Tell me when you, when did you first know who Dom was? How did you meet him and you know, that type of thing?
Okay, wow. I think Dom was always with me, but I didn't really have, a formal sense of him until I was 5 years old. And it's such a mundane story. I think it's so mundane that I never even think about telling it.
Mm-hmm.
I was 5 years old, and my brother had gone off to school, so that meant I had to entertain myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to get up in an apple tree. My dad had kind of made a seat in this apple tree that, you know, that's where my universe was. I loved it. But without my brother's boost, I couldn't get up there, so I was very frustrated.
Okay.
You know, drug the apple box over the tree trying to get up. And, I probably worked 10 minutes, but it felt like 5 hours to a
mm-hmm.
five-year-old. And I got mad, and I sat on the rockery, and I kind of think I probably fired everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in that frustrated moment, a little boy was standing next to me and said, "Be in the tree." I'm looking at, and by the time I looked at the tree and looked back at him, he was in the tree,
mm-hmm.
which really ticked me off. And I said, "You come down here and you give me a push." And he said, "I said, be in the tree." And
uh-huh.
so I got up on that little apple box.
Uh-huh.
And I was, you know, about to give him my 5-year-old tantrum. And just as I started to say, "You get down here again," I was absolutely pushed from behind. Mm. Got my handhold, got up in the tree, went to tell the little kid off, and guess what? No Dom. Gone.
Mm.
Gone. That was my first experience. He then started coming every day.
Mm-hmm.
And started training me, which I had no idea I was being trained.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very frustrating for me because, of course, Mom couldn't see him.
Well, oftentimes parents just don't stop and think what power, for lack of a better word, that children have. But I believe they're very cognizant of what's going on around them.
Well, one thing I have really learned over the years is that often if you listen to children,
mm-hmm.
they will name their cats, their dog, their toys, their dolls, rag dolls or teddy bears or whatever, the name of their guide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because once they name something that's physical, parents quit ragging on them
mm-hmm.
about their invisible friends.
Mm-hmm.
I really think the most destructive thing you can do is take away a person's invisible friend.
Mm-hmm. That's
I
true.
Really do. I think it hurts our psyche.
Yeah.
And it makes us be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I also understand we have to ask certain questions too, guys, because you can call up a negative spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because somebody dies doesn't make them a saint. So if you had, say, a grandparent
mm-hmm.
that didn't get to see your kids and that grandparent died, and say he was alcoholic,
mm-hmm.
okay, he may not have overcome that addiction and that kind of temperament,
mm-hmm.
but he may come back to visit with that child. That child's innocent. It doesn't know that that person may still have the temper.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be frightened of him because he has the temper. But they may call him Grandpa. They may call him by his name.
Mm-hmm.
So if that happens, what you do is discern.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel safe in this? If they don't feel safe, you can ask them to go away. Period. Innocence. Anytime
mm-hmm.
you ask
mm-hmm.
them to go away, send them away with white light. They have to leave. Cosmic law.
Mm-hmm.
Of spirit, yeah. So, and you can tell them that they can come and visit only if you're there, too. If you want to pray for that person
mm-hmm.
who has not given up their addiction or still is dealing with their own anger, often they'll come to the grandkids because they're trying to get forgiveness from the kids. You know, I'll do better
mm-hmm.
with my... How many parents have you seen? I'll do better with my grandkids because I'm older, mature, I got over my...
Right.
I do better in this world now with my grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
Kids, because I've got a second chance than I do with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to really be forgiving. We have to be open to the possibilities
That's right.
of repairing all kinds of connections.
That's
but we
right.
also don't have to ever put anybody in jeopardy or in fear,
mm-hmm.
a space of fear. Path. So it's wonderful to acknowledge that. So, yeah, so from 5 years old, I was pretty much, it was me and Dom against the world, or with the world, I'm not even sure which.
I'm really glad that you answered that for me because I just love hearing about your life and what you have accomplished, and I'm so proud of you.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat.
So, well, I won't take any more of your time.
Thanks for calling in.
Take care.
Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I think for me, I forget because Dom is such an integral part of my life and because... You know, it's almost like I grew up with Dom as my, you know, extra brother. The one that didn't pick on me and the one that didn't give me a bad time, at least like my own physical brothers did. But he really was a mentor, and at times, you know, I'm not going to say that it wasn't frustrating. Being overly sensitive is not always fun. I think I would love to see teachers really get that sometimes the kids are just seeing, feeling, empathizing, just like the story I was talking about, the kids in that kindergarten class. It was really interesting because as we talked about what we saw these two children having problems in their lives, one with a health problem, one with certainly family issues, we also saw who was the most sensitive children in that class. And there were two little girls that would really mother these other two kids. And I really knew that those two kids, obviously, were very the sensitive to almost that kind of nurturing, fix it, you know, help where there's, I know something wrong, but I don't know what it is, but I'll try and fix it anyway kind of thing. And you'll see that with kids. You'll see up until I think they're about 8 years old. By the time they're 8 years old in our society today, unfortunately, the BS, the belief systems of the world, get in the way. And they get into cliques. And it's sad to say, because it used to not happen until high school, late junior high, high school, that there would be these little cliques. And if you're not wearing the right thing, or you're not doing the right thing, or you don't wear your hair the right way, or you don't have the right shoes, or whatever it is, or you're not into the same thing that the in thing is, that the type of music or whatever. It used to be that kids had a chance to be really kids and be children, and that margin is shrinking every year, unfortunately. And so hopefully by the time they're 8 years old, 10 at the latest, hopefully you have already instilled a self-worth, self-value support system for them to be okay. The greatest gift you can give any child is self-esteem. If you can help them to have self-esteem, they never have to make anyone less than to be good enough. And if you can instill that in them, guess what? You'll probably get it in yourself as well, because I tell you 90% or 98% of the adults in the world today do not have self-esteem. And as long as we don't, we're in fear of and lack of, and we will always be in competition, usually with ourselves, because we will be so busy beating ourselves up, no one else has to. I wish I could say that I have overcome that. I have not yet, but I strive more and more each day to work on that, to know that we are all a spark of the divine spirit. God got us all that is, whatever you want to call that. And in that part of us is divinely perfect and is in balance, has all the compassion the world will ever need if we will only let it out. And so in these new kids, if we can have the compassion as parents, as grandparents, as aunts and uncles, to keep that magic, that spark of wonder alive. Why do people think Harry Potter is so wonderful? Why is it such a big rave? All of these, the Last Nimsy and all these things, by the way, which is a fabulous show. You have to, I think it's called The Last Nimsy. Fabulous, very metaphysical and esoteric. One reason Disney has done so well in the world, Disneyland and all that, is it's based on the innocence and the quote-unquote fantasies, which are really reality in my world, of a lot of the magic, the mystic experiences of spirit, of the abilities that is really our birthright and came in with us. You know, the sixth sense and the seventh sense is common sense. And someday we'll get them all right and all together in a box and it'll work better. But for now, sometimes we have to learn that kids color outside the line because it's art. And to understand that as long as we're in touch with that something within us that sees the more in another person, that is the next generation that we will change the world. Because we will see our likenesses, our uniquenesses, our imperfections will become the thing that makes us most amazing. Because truly, no two snowflakes are alike and no two people are alike. We each come in with something unique in each part of us that needs exploring. There's a wonderful book, and I've mentioned it a couple other times, but so many people were writing me about childhood things. I want to share this book with you again. And it was written by James Van Prague, and it's called Looking Beyond, A Teenage Guide to Spiritual World. Bless his little heart for writing this book, and he's another person that came in very much, I think, like me. His story is a little different, but in this book that he has written, it really takes the mystery out of all these kinds of things, these experiences. It gives kids that are sensitive and that are aware really great tools. I have wonderful, wonderful artists did the drawings in here, and so it's really a book that I highly recommend. And I actually love it for adults, too. I think that James has done some amazing work and had the courage to go out on that limb with Shirley MacLaine and open up to the world, his world, and that is the world of spirit, and experiencing it from a very young age. I can remember, I think, one of the next most amazing things was Dom was, you know, because Dom was looked like a kid 2 years older than me. It wasn't so dramatic, and I didn't get what my mom meant by he's an invisible friend. I couldn't get what that meant at 5 and 6 years old. It just didn't make sense to me because to me, I could see him, touch him. He was real. So when I was small, I used to talk about that. I used to talk about the angels, which was in my mother's frame of reference because she was Southern Baptist. That was okay. But when I talked about the fairies, it was fine that I talked about fairies up until I was about 7 or 8, and then it was, you know, like an issue because my mom says, you know, fairies aren't exactly real. And I said, oh, no, Mom, fairies are real. And I would tell her that the fairy said not to do certain things to certain plants. And if she followed what I said, what the fairy said, then the plants would grow better and so forth and so on. And there's a part of her, I think, that really, really wanted to believe. I think there was a part of my mom that was that little childlike, innocent girl, too, that wanted to believe. And because she had me late in life, she was 43, I think she really, you know, got to live some of her childhood she didn't get to live through me. But I can remember when we first got the TV, it was black and white TV, and I came running in and drug my mother in to the living room to see, because Disneyland came on and one of the fairies came and that hit the wand and the sparks flew and, you know, there was Tinkerbell. I said, see, Mom, it's on TV, so now you know it's real. I can remember her just laughing and laughing about that, but it was true to me. Obviously, somebody else saw what I saw because there it was in a different form. I really believe that what we're seeing in some of the movies now, the special effects, are people who are visionary, who have seen and had the sixth sense and the second sight all their lives and are bringing it into the reality of this special effects. I have to tell you, when I saw the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze, I was so thrilled. Not because it was a great story, although it really is, but because someone was actually portraying spirit as it is in a way for me. It's not exactly 100% like that, but it was pretty realistic and pretty accurate. If you have seen that movie, there's a scene in that movie where Whoopi is pretending, she was pretending in the beginning to be a clairvoyant, but then she's being a medium, and the room's just lined up and with spirits waiting to use her as a channel. It's pretty factual. Now, I have to tell you, though, for me, there's one thing, and if you've seen the movie The Sixth Sense, remember the boy saw all these people, different ways they died. That may be for him how he sees spirit. That's not how it works for me. And I forget to tell people about this a lot of times. Most of the time when I'm doing a reading or when spirit's coming to me, in the beginning of the reading, I'll have a sense they'll tell me either they'll tell me how they passed, they'll show me by putting pressure somewhere on my body, like I'll have a heaviness in my chest, or I might have feel like my heart is heavy. That'll tell me a heart attack or breathing issues or certain things. Or they'll have me have a sense of an accident or something. Or they'll show me an accident. Most of the time, I don't see them all bloody, gory, and icky. That's just not how it was for me. I think Dom knew if I saw spirit that way, I'd be bailing out the door with the next guy because it would be scaring me a lot. And I didn't blame that little kid in Sixth Sense for being terrified. Temperature often does go down because spirit's vibration is different than ours, so you might get cold, you might get chills. But most of the time, I have to ask them how they passed. I have to ask for more information because most of the time, they go to the happiest time in their life. So if they passed at 72, they might appear 32 if that was the happiest time in their life. Hello, welcome to the airwaves.
Hi, Atira. I have a question for you. This is Mary Ellen in Oregon.
And that gives me a great segue. Mary Ellen Angel Scribe.
With the famous kitties.
Yes, with the swimming cats, and she also runs my website. She is a cross between Pollyanna, Mary Poppins, practically perfect. Hello.
Yeah, you're amazing. Hey, listen, I wanted to ask you. My daughter said that when she was in about grade 5 and she walked into the classroom on the first day of school, the kids who had, this is how she worded it, the kids who were like me, Mom, their auras flashed in unison with her aura. That's how she knew who to go to and who connect with. Now, when you were going to school, how was it for you in the classroom?
Wow, what a mouthful. Yeah, you know, she's real right. She's right, actually. You know, really, you can tell who vibrates to who because usually kids' auras, especially when they're young, get synced up with their parents, And they do have, like, a little flashing code that makes them match up.
We have our own little digital codes.
Yeah, our, really, truly, almost a little digital cellular code, yeah, that does pulsate. I wouldn't say exactly flashes, but I guess it would appear that way, pulsates to that same vibration of your mom's. And the more afraid you get, or the more afraid any... That's the other thing that happens. These kids' cords, so, like, if you're having marital problems, your kid cords to that. You don't ever have to yell in the room or say anything. They just pick up on that flight or fright, and their little auric field starts going in panic mode, yeah. But it is hard in school because you get distracted by all that stuff that's going on. And I can remember in kindergarten, I actually think I still have that first report card, and it was that, you know, I seem to play well with others. I seem to be overly concerned with certain kids, and I think that's that sensitive thing we were talking about, the kind of wanting to take care of somebody whose maybe life isn't going so good, and that I was easily distracted.
Yeah, that.
Because I was all over the place, you know. It's sort of like, we joke about this, you and I, that we're talking along, and then all of a sudden, oh, there goes a bird, and oh, that tree over there, you know. It's like in a few minutes I could have covered, you know, a lot of different things that have gone on in our conversation, because I get distracted. Like driving with traveling with Mary Ellen is always a very interesting experience, because I used to not be very comfortable with ever telling anybody, but
I love it.
Now that I've traveled with Mary Ellen, because she's like, oh, cool, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, Dom will say blue lights, and that means there's a policeman somewhere. Just slow down and pay attention. And we've had that many, many times where we'd be driving. I said, Dom says blue light. I don't see anything. Where did you? And then, you know, we'll come up behind something, and there will be the cop car.
Well, that time we're coming down from Canada, you said that, and I started to speed up again after we passed a few blue lights. Usually you pass one, you know, and then you go down the road, and there just aren't any more, so I started to speed up again. She says, no, Dom says there's blue lights. And I thought, how can there be more? There never is. Had no clue. They've got this new thing out called Saturation Patrol. And between Vancouver, British Columbia, and Tacoma, we saw 38 flashing blue lights.
Yeah, it was a busy Dom day. It was on blue light alert and blue light special.
That's right. Hey, I also wanted to ask, since we're talking about children, and I hope this is going to be a chapter in your book because it's fascinating, but when my daughter first met you, she came into the house, and I was outside. She came outside, and she says, Mommy, who's that man that Auntie Atira is talking to? And then she says the same thing. So that's when I knew that your readings were accurate, that you weren't coming for ego, that you weren't a wannabe, that you were really connected. And
yeah.
I sent her back in saying, you need to talk to Auntie Atira, and tell them what you said.
I don't even remember.
You'd never had anybody overhear your angel again.
I don't think I ever had anyone probably see Dom. So I think that was a first. And of course, Ariel was very innocent and very trusting at that point. You know, that's that wonderful age where they do trust. And I love that age. I wish it would hang around a lot more. Unfortunately, in our society, it disappears too fast. But, you know, Ariel was also a kid that was very alert. And I can remember the story about being in the grocery store and asking you why you always pick food that's basically dead, I think she said.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what she said. It always had black energy. But I hate cooking, so I was picking the perfect food. But you don't want to feed your family food with black ores.
No.
You know?
But, you know, kids see that. I mean, I really think the more we listen to our kids and hear, like, you know, what they say. And listen, if they're pretending, if they're playing and they're pretending and they're talking to somebody, listen to that conversation, because you'll know if it's a good one or not.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, you know, very rarely do I have somebody that's being bothered by a negative spirit, you know. Even often what parents would call negative spirits are really just trying to get somebody to listen to them. They're not really meaning to hurt a child, or, you know, you hear about, well, they left scratches on my child, this or that happened. Sometimes that is just, unfortunately, a confused spirit, a spirit that's lost or angry or protecting something.
Mm-hmm.
And so really what you have to do is discern and ask. And any time, if you use white light, divine white light, Lord's Prayer, any kind of prayerful energy, that will usually stop that going on. And if that doesn't stop, then seek somebody who's worked in this kind of energy and knows what they're doing to help alleviate and take the fear away and make your place safe. Truly, truly, prayer is an amazing thing.
I'm glad you just brought that up. What about, what does prayer look like to you? Can you actually see it?
Yeah, you do. I actually see, and it's really interesting because a few years ago you wrote about pink hearts when you had your experience with cancer. And I can remember being at your house and saying, what is all these pink hearts? What is all this pink hearts coming in? And I didn't know that you, that's how you visualize it. But it is truly, it usually comes in for me when I was younger, especially on like a pink ribbon, like somebody was twirling a pink ribbon. It comes in on a pink, sometimes red, depending on how intense it is, energy field. Some people send it in and it looks like little sparks and they'll just come into your energy field and go pop, pop, pop.
So they actually make a difference. Like if we were going to pray for somebody who's listening to the radio right now is having a health issue, and everybody right now sent their energy, you could actually see that energy take off from.
You could actually see that energy.
Wow.
Yeah, because we are actually, when we're praying, we're sending part of our etheric energy, our electromagnetic field, out in communication on the spiritual vibration to that other person. Mm-hmm. That's why when you've lost somebody and you pray for them, it's like giving them a cosmic hug.
Oh.
It literally is like wrapping your energy, your auric field around, and it amounts to a hug, like a physical hug would be. Mm-hmm. Same when you pray for someone, say that's sick or anything, you know, it comes out in many forms. Children's prayers are almost like little, they're so wonderful. They're like little, if you took sparklers, but you made them like every primary color, they're very intense.
Magical.
Yeah, it's very, very cool to see them. And they bounce. They're like, because their energy is so, like, kind of all over, it's like seeing these little bouncing sparkles going down. And, you know, because they throw their self into them, you know. When you see these little kids, like, get down on their knees and they're praying so intensely, you know, it's magic because these little sparks are just flying out of their little auric fields, and it's so beautiful.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, very wonderful, yeah. And watch little kids. If you ever see them, like, in, you know, 5 and 6 year old, hug each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they throw their whole selves into it. There isn't any doubt, you know, that they're giving love out.
Somebody was saying the other day that when a puppy moves its tail and moves it back and forth, wiggling it, it sends out energy each time into the room.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see things like that?
Absolutely. There's nothing, you know, more fun than to watch a cat purr. I don't think about saying anything about it, but yeah, when a cat purrs, that energy is like seeing a little rainbow go poof, poof, poof as they purr. Yeah, animals in particular are really exude a love. They exude an energy, and they usually, interestingly enough, animals often use every color in their auric field when they're excited, and when they, you know, like the dog that comes up and it's all over and oh my god, it's so excited. It's actually kind of sending out little rainbows because it's like it doesn't discern to only use one color of its energy field. It uses all of it. So it's this little, like, quakey wave that goes out in their immense joy to greet you and to be around you. So it is color. It is vibration. It is sound.
That's amazing. It's actually alive. Like, all those that can hear and see like you do, you give us hope that it really exists and it carry on with our belief, because we have to believe it. We don't see it like you do.
But you sense it. That's what I want to say. Everybody can learn to sense this. And I believe if you practice, you can learn to see and to see it at many levels. I think for me, because it's just I came in this way, I was never taught not to. Thank God for that, even though my poor mother tried so hard to save me, you know, and to protect me. I certainly turned down the volume for a while, but when it came back on, it was just like it had never gone away for me.
Wow.
And
thank
so, you know, there's lots of things we talk about every day, even though we've known each other a long time now, that I don't think to break down, because I just, in my mind, assume everybody sees what I see or knows what I know. So it catches me kind of off guard that other people don't see, you know. And I don't see every time, like, okay, like I have my cat, Mr. Perfect. Every time I see him purr, I don't see that. But I do see it. The colors do that.
But do cats pray? Is that their form of prayer to help people who are ill?
Cats are very intuitive. Almost all animals will sense and know if someone's ill long before you do. I know that we've talked about Agnes, the pet psychic. We were talking about that many times animals will come up and, like, be on your body where there's an injury or where they want to be as close to that because they're exuding healing energy. It's just their nature to be to use their love to heal.
Wonderful. I'm doing my newspaper column, Pet Tips and Tails, today, and somebody said when they come home from work and the dogs go nuts and the one without the tail wiggles his butt and the other little one dances up and down and tries to jump on their leg, they said it literally at that moment turns a bad day into a good day.
Well, and I'll tell you why it does that. You come in and you've got the little, you know, the cartoon with the little rain cloud over it, you know. You come in and your aura, you've had a hard day at work, and you get in your car and you're coming home from work, and it's about 4 o'clock, around 4 or 5 o'clock, you start pulling your aura in as you start relaxing. Rather than expanding, you start letting the stuff shift away from you about work, but that layer of stress and anxiety that's been kind of like a tight wire starts collapsing in on your auric field. So when you go and then you get to your door, first your home, you have a safe energy there, so your energy will expand a little bit. When your animals come to greet you, what happens? They throw their beautiful, innocent, little, happy, can't get enough of you, love you, love you, energy against that auric field that's got clutter. And basically, they hit your auric field with that joy and love, and it literally shakes the dust off of it.
Wow.
It literally impacts it, and it's like the dust or like a ash will fall away of the stress that you don't need. So
well,
they really, really give your, you know, or feel a little bit of cleansing.
I just want to say, like all your listeners out there, you really blow our socks off. You clean our aura every time we hear your show. Everything's new and fresh, and thank goodness you talk so fast because we want to learn it all.
Thanks, Muriel. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. Enjoyed your show. Thank you.
Thanks. I have to say I appreciate that Mary Ellen called in because sometimes, you know, I do forget to break things down because I do assume it's normal. I want to say please keep tuned to BBS Radio for incredible spiritual enlightenment and just so many things that Don and Seth and his whole team bring to the airwaves, the opportunity to talk about spirit, to teach, and to learn and just develop in a more spiritual way is such a gift, and I just appreciate all those that are behind the scenes and all the great people that BBS has brought an opportunity to have them on the airwaves. Please check out bbsradio.com and see who's speaking when and where. Please also check out my website at angelscribe.com, and I will look forward to catching you on the airwaves next week. And until then, remember to let your heart light shine to light your way and the way for others, and stay wrapped in the wings of your angels.
Mary Ellen Angel Scribe, author of Expect Miracles and the Angels and Miracles Good Newsletter, can be found at angelscribe.com.
Oh.